Welcome back. This is Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Last week's New Futures Digital Broadcasting Conference at Te Papa in Wellington was a who's who of broadcasters, policy people, producers and media geeks. We'll be bringing you coverage and commentary on what went down there, but this week we're concentrating on one guest, Britain's Dr. William Cooper. Dr. Cooper, a digital media consultant who runs the website informitv.com, is the former head of online and new media at the BBC and played a key role in launching the Freeview platform there. With the help of the British Council, we snaffled him for last week's public address Carrajo's Great Blend events in Wellington and Auckland. In front of a crowd of 300-odd in Auckland, I asked him about the new devices coming our way, including digital TV decoders that also do internet, before we got onto the big television story in Britain this past month. What people are calling a crisis of trust in television.
Well, the BBC and most other broadcasters, it must be said, apart from Sky, it's very interesting that while interactivity has become sort of de rigueur, as I described, what a lot of programme makers have turned to is what we call premium rate telephony, which is basically high-priced phone calls for votes and that kind of thing. And most of the primetime TV formats now have some kind of audience interaction, what we call participation TV. And this is is an important part of the bottom line of their budget and their production budget. And this has been going on for many years, reasonably successfully. And I think that producers have kind of seen this as just part of the format, and it's a bit of fun, and the viewers can participate. But really, they're still shaping those programmes, and they very much see it as the show must go on. And I think that earlier this year, a number of incidents emerged, and I think what broadcasters didn't realise is they kind of crossed a boundary in terms of this, in terms of offering consumers a service. And contractually, if you pay a pound to vote for something, you expect that vote to count. And I'm not sure that executives necessarily took the same seriousness.
Well, quite clearly, in at least two or three instances, that the votes didn't. And
yeah.
But that seems to have spilled over into a wider distrust of modern television. All of a sudden people are saying, well, in the Gordon Ramsay series where he came out of the ocean with a fresh fish on the end of his spear, he didn't really catch the fish. And this actually seems to have gone further, I think, than anyone expected.
Yeah, I think that, it's probably the media, really exaggerating this through their lens. But certainly the major distrust has been around this participation stuff. And I think that's because, viewers' pockets have been impacted. Certainly, our website, we get emails from people that say that they've spent £4,000 on voting for these services, and they believe that, half of their votes didn't count. And all of the broadcasters are now offering to refund this money. One of the breakfast franchises, the breakfast station, is probably £40 million out of pocket as a result of this, and their chief executive has left the building. So, this is serious stuff.
Yeah.
And all of the broadcasters have been embroiled in this. The BBC was even found on its flagship children's programme, Blue Peter, which you may have heard of. Two have had one of the visitors to the studio pretend to be a competition winner because the phone lines went down and so on. And, this is probably not a very wise idea in retrospect. But, there's only one or two instances with the BBC, but it's been painted as, something that's endemic. And certainly in commercial television, there are serious issues there. And I think that the media have then started saying, well, hang on, if this is falsified, what else? And, for anyone in television, it's sort of an open secret that there's a certain amount of kind of smoke and mirrors involved in the creation of, the art of television and so on. But it's as I said, there are commercial imperatives, and I think that's really the line that's been crossed.
But meanwhile, you've got Jeremy Paxman standing up at the Edinburgh Television Festival last weekend making a cry for the soul of television. And his major point was that in this sort of fragmented media world, TV actually really needs to say what it's for.
Yeah, I mean, television always goes through, crises of confidence. There's nothing new about that. It's a fairly neurotic kind of medium. The Edinburgh Television Festival is always, discussing the next major threat to television and its future. But I think in this new world, it is becoming apparent that television and broadcasting isn't the only way that you're going to get video media. Even with news and current affairs, and the kind of discourse is moving beyond television. I started work as a radio and television television journalist, and you know, to my own dismay, I no longer watch broadcast bulletins. I watch rolling news quite a lot, and I use the web. But you know, I have moved away from that kind of consumption of television news, and I think that is apparent. And my own view is that, that television will increasingly just sort of revert to live news, sport, events, you know, weather, and all of the other stuff can be better delivered by other means.
Actually, let's take a show of hands. Who watches broadcast TV news more than three nights a week?
Not many, is it?
No. Should broadcasters be worried about that?
I think they should, yes. Yeah, and particularly, you know, for the importance in terms of you know, discourse, the importance of television news is something I feel passionately about. To a certain extent, it's being supplemented by new media and other media. But I think that it's a real fear for public service broadcasters, certainly, that there's a whole generation that is moving away from that form of television. And news has always been, you know, classic appointment to view television, and people aren't rushing home to watch programmes in the same way. When you've got a PVR, you know, large proportion of your viewing is now time-slipped or recorded. And news just doesn't work with a PVR, basically.
And of course, the BBC's other PR problem at the moment, which you would think should have been an absolute win for them, was the nearly full release of their iPlayer video on demand software.
Yeah, we should perhaps explain what this is. Who's heard of the iPlayer over here? A few of you. So iPlayer is basically the brand name for the BBC's download video on demand service. And the idea is that you can download programmes up to 7 days after transmission. They're rights protected. You can watch them for up to 30 days after you've downloaded them, and then they disappear. And this has been something that's been in the offing for 4 or 5 years. I mean, we were first talking about it certainly when I was still there. And it was a much, much simpler kind of concept at the time. It's taken a long time to bust through some of the rights issues involved in that. I think that's been one of the major issues. And anything that the BBC does comes under a great deal of scrutiny in terms of competition and commercial concerns. So there's been quite a few hoops to jump through in terms of regulation. But most of the broadcasters in Britain are now doing this. So Channel 4's launched a similar service. Sky, the satellite operator, has got a similar service. ITV's doing something streaming, which is a bit similar to what TVNZ On Demand is over here. So all the major broadcasters are now making their programmes available online. The BBC is putting, you know, a substantial part of its broadcast programming online. This service has yet to launch formally, as you say. It's kind of ramping up slowly through a controlled beta release. There's probably about 50,000 users at the moment only. But as you say, you know, this should have been a great thing and was touted as, you know, perhaps overambitiously as the biggest thing since colour television, and that therein may lie the problem. It's been overhyped. But there has been a certain amount of criticism, and particularly, you know, amongst the sort of blogging types. And I think, you know, I'd count myself in terms of, in terms of questioning perhaps whether public service broadcasters should be quite so close to the sort of commercial digital rights management issues.
That seems to have been one of the big objections that the BBC, this licence payer funded organisation, has put digital rights management all over everything, and stuff expires and you can't keep it. Could they have done something else there?
Well, possibly. I mean, I think it's important to understand the terrain in which they're operating. So a lot of the programming that they deliver hasn't been produced by them. It's been commissioned by them from third parties or acquired, and other people have the rights. And so they only acquire the rights for, say, two terrestrial transmissions. So they just don't have the rights to make that available freely on the web, you know, in perpetuity. So they've created this window through technical means, effectively, using digital rights management. The problem really is that there isn't an open digital rights, you know, viable solution, and therefore, you know, this is a proprietary system, you know, with one of the world's largest software companies, and that puts the BBC in perhaps a slightly awkward position. It's worth saying that in terms of audio, which, you know, the rights situation is somewhat different, apart from certain music programming, that is being made available without rights restriction. So effectively, you know, Radio 4, which is the main speech network in the UK, will make many of its programs available on the internet without rights encumbrance, and therefore you can assume that they'll be available internationally in perpetuity, which is a good thing.
That's actually ironic, because the hardest thing for the public broadcasters here to clear has been the music, particularly the mechanical rights with AMCOS. Radio New Zealand has to go through its streams and, you know, the on-demand stuff, and actually they can get a license for streaming, but they have to take out every second of music.
Yeah. Well, as I say, this, you know, there are certain forms of music, and you know, long-form concerts and things like that are excluded. But a lot of other shows are included, and certainly speech radio is.
How much of an issue is copyright? Because we all know that when you ignore copyright, everything works really wonderfully on the internet. BitTorrent's great. I mean, iPlayer, when you were there, was going to be BitTorrent and RSS, wasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, certainly it was first mooted as a kind of response to what was happening anyway. And the BBC, I think, was quite early in identifying this and saying, can we produce something that's legitimate? And of course, you know, if you can manage the right situation in other ways, then, you know, there are perfectly reasonable existing software mechanisms that are used by other people. I think, you know, rights presents intractable issues, and it's been at the heart of the debate that we've been talking about for the last few days here in New Zealand, and it doesn't go away. I think there are opportunities for, say, public service broadcasters to say, let's take a completely different position on this, let's buy out the rights for certain programmes, and let's make a virtue of that, and then we can give them back to the nation. So it is possible to take that that line, and there are things like Creative Commons, which is a rights framework which allows you to, for instance, reserve commercial rights to allow people to create derivative works, for instance. Yeah. So there are things that public service broadcasters can do, and you know, I probably encourage people over here to be thinking about that as far as possible.
Yeah, Creative Commons New Zealand is actually in the process of launching. They're just finalising the licences, which is actually really good news.
Yeah. So, you know, you can't necessarily do that with everything, but I think that most broadcasters probably have something with which that would be relevant. So I'd encourage people to sort of grasp that opportunity, because, as you say, things do get much, much easier in terms of super distribution once you can relax a little bit around the rights issues. And I personally believe that if you can do that, then, you know, you'll be rewarded in other ways.
Dr. William Cooper at the Carajo's Great Blend. You can keep up with his observations on the media future at informitv.com. And you can find out more about the New Zealand Creative Commons at creativecommons.org.nz.
And that's our show for this week. You've been listening to Public Address Radio on Radio Live, and our thanks go to New Zealand On Air. If you want to hear any items from this or previous shows, just go to publicaddress.net/radio. I'm Graham Reed.
And I'm Russell Brown. Goodbye.